Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9 to 5 for a 5 to 9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Service is not available in all areas.
Let's head to the phone lines right now to be joined by our Royals insider, Josh Vernier, joining us on the show today. Vern, how you doing today, my man?
I'm sweaty. How are you?
Vern, I'm doing great. How often do you eat breakfast?
Every day. It's my favorite meal of the day.
See,
I normally have the same thing every day, every day.
We were just talking about how we were told so much as kids that breakfast is the most important meal of the day, and then that's the meal that I skip the most. I eat lunch most days. I eat dinner just about every day. I don't really eat breakfast a whole lot.
Well, I think that also plays into your schedule, right? You probably have dinner after the show, so that's, I think, a late dinner. So maybe you stay up a little late, get up a little late. I can understand skipping breakfast. I'm known to do that now. Now, as I say, I have breakfast every morning. Breakfast might happen at noon. You know, I might make myself a breakfast sandwich at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and that'll be my first meal of the day. I always have breakfast, but the time certainly varies. Like the Royals have, back-to-back night games. I'll probably sleep in a little tomorrow, and maybe not have breakfast until like 12:30.
You said that you eat the same thing for breakfast. What do you normally get?
Normally just a run-of-the-mill breakfast sandwich, just 2 pieces of toast, a bunch of cheese, a piece of sausage, and one cracked egg. I used to always go 2 eggs, but that doesn't sit right anymore. I think your boy's lactose intolerant, but I still power through it, 1 egg every morning.
And I would say just at the rate at what eggs cost right now, if you can eat 2 eggs every single day, I don't know what they're paying you. We need to switch jobs then. I need to be the Royals insider.
No, we need to get some wins on this homestand. You're right. You're right. We need some wins here.
Vern, last food question. I know this probably doesn't happen a whole lot, but let's say that you and the wife go get brunch. You know, let's just say for the weekend, you're just off and she's like, hey, babe, we never get a chance to go get brunch. What are you ordering at a brunch?
It's got to have... There's sausage gravy on something. Probably a biscuit, a couple of biscuits. I can go crazy. I mean, I love everything that breakfast has to offer, but I'll probably go with a Western omelet, biscuits and gravy on the side. And, if they serve one of those big old cinnamon rolls, I'll probably order one of those bad boys too and then just sleep for the rest of the day.
All right, Vern, let's start with this. The Royals just had a 6-game road trip. They went 4-2. You'll certainly take that. What did the Royals do to have a winning record this past week?
They pitched like they have really all season. But what you saw in that 3-game sweep in Texas and what you saw in the opener against the Padres was a good offense. Well, honestly, that game on Friday in San Diego, to me, was the best game of the season. They hit well. They got a good start. The bullpen was good. They ran the bases well. They defended well. And they even showed off that sixth tool, that toughness, the togetherness, the competitive spirit, getting punched in the face the way that they did in that game against the Padres to get off the mat and walk away with a victory. Two of the 5 most impressive wins of the year, I think, happened on this past road trip. And again, that, of course, comes back to the offense, the thing that we've been waiting on all year. We continue to wait on because we saw 1 run on Saturday, 2 runs on Sunday. But you saw Salvi, Vinny, I mean, you know the names. Jonathan India, Bobby Witt Jr., they were really good. Mikel Garcia continues to be really good. Jack Caglione ran into a pair of home runs. So I've said it before, C-Dot, I've told you that this team can't continue to be both, right? You can't be the worst team in the American League at hitting home runs and also the worst team in baseball when it comes to hitting with runners in scoring position. In the 4 wins, they weren't both of those things. Now they were still one of them, even in the games that they were winning, they weren't coming through with runners in scoring position, but they were offsetting that by hitting bombs. So as we get ready to take on the Rays and the Dodgers, you can't be both. You got to do one of two things. You got to hit multiple home runs, or you got to come through with runners in scoring position, because you know the pitching's going to be there. You believe the defense is going to be there. You hope the base running doesn't screw anything up. But like most of the first 78 games of the season, it comes back to the offense. Did they show up? Yes or no? And on the road trip, for the better part of this road trip, the answer was yes, they showed up.
Right now, we're talking to our Royals insider, Josh Vernier, joining us on the show. Let's talk about Jack Caglione. You mentioned the two home runs. Let's talk about the defensive play. I was very encouraged because the athleticism is there. Some of, I think, his issues in right field just come from feel and just a lack of opportunities. I think back to his first start at Kauffman Stadium, where he kind of had some very quirky balls hit in his direction. I don't know if, as a team, they played them correctly. But this seems like something. He has the athleticism. All he really needs is just time and more repetition and more opportunities. I think he can be a decent right fielder. Maybe he's not what Alex Gordon was in left, but he certainly can be capable. And if you can get a capable defensive right fielder and you add that to what we project him to be offensively, that's a really, really good player that plays every day.
Oh, without question. I agree wholeheartedly with the assessment of the athleticism, no doubt. He's been even better than I think fans expected. Better defensively, better on the base paths. Maybe fans were expecting... I know fans were expecting more than two home runs by now, but the at-bats, to me, are better than anyone could have expected. Right field, and to your point about he needs, you know, better jumps, and that's just experience and, you know, more time out there. Next year spring training, I would imagine he's going to look like a league-average corner outfielder. But the question is, next spring training, is that where they want him? You know, is Salvi on this team next year in spring training? What's Vinny Pasquantino's role on this team next year in spring training? I mean, Jack Caglione could be the first baseman for this team next year. So, you know, credit to Rusty Kuntz. Obviously, all the credit to Jack Caglione for putting the work in. He does look like an adequate right fielder, but that doesn't mean that over the course of these final 84 games, we're not going to see multiple errors from the 22-year-old, right? He made his first error on this road trip as well, as he just whiffed on a ball. He's an athlete. He's a terrific ball player. You know, he's been pitching and playing first base for, you know, his entire professional career, and his collegiate career hasn't been in the outfield since he was in high school. And you know, who knows how seriously you're taking those reps in high school when you're hitting 500-foot tanks and everybody wants to be around you. So, yeah, wherever you put Jack Caglione, the bat is going to warrant it, and I think the work ethic is going to allow him to earn that spot in right field. You see it tonight. John Rave is the designated hitter rather than Cags. Rave is a better defender, but Cags is the future. So Rave starting this one off as the DH.
I do think that Jack Caglione has kind of reminded people of two things. And I think people know this, but sometimes it's like kind of seeing that example where baseball is really hard and he didn't make that look like it in the minor leagues. It also takes some time. You know, there was an expectation that he was going to come up and just start dominating. He hits 270 and hits for power, and it's taken a little bit of time. I think people have to remember we're talking about somebody who just last year was in the College World Series. You just don't instantly plop into Major League Baseball and have success. I mean, you got to be Ken Griffey Jr., Alex Rodriguez. Like, you got to be one of those guys to basically hit the ground running from day one.
And, maybe he hasn't hit the ground running, but he's moving at a pretty good pace for being less than a month into his big league career. Yeah, with all that stuff taken into account, no doubt, worthy of celebration, and if I'm a Royals fan, worthy of excitement, not only for the future, the fact that you know you have him and Bobby Witt Jr. and Michael Garcia together at least until the end of the 2030 season. So not only should you be excited about the future, but I think that's another reason why. And I'm not going to be the one to do it, but it's another reason why, if you choose to be patient with this offense, I get it. You know, it's a reason why, you know, I'm on the air after that opening victory in Arlington when the Royals' big bats come through in a big way, saying this is why you stick with the team. Because we know Vinny's better than hitting below 200 with runners in scoring position. We know Bobby's a 900 OPS guy. We know Salvi's better than what he was in the first 2 months of the season. We sure hope Jonathan India's better than what he's provided over the first half of the season. And Jack Caglione, what I think he's going to be come August and September, coupled with what we believe Bobby and Vinny and Salvi, keep saying that, but what we believe those three can be, coupled with what it looks like Jack Caglione's going to be with more experience, not just in the outfield, but also offensively. Look at what the A's Nick Kurtz is doing after he had not a bumpy start to his big league career, another one of those draft picks from a season ago. I wouldn't call it a bumpy start, but it didn't hit the ground running and hit bombs left and right. He's starting to now. I think that's coming for Jack Caglione. So for those that say, Vern, this team is so much more than just one bat away, you might be right. But one bat, coupled with Cags and Mikel now supporting those big three that we've been talking about since last season. I mean, that's what this team was missing last year, was the power of Caglione and the five-tool ability of Mikel Garcia to surround Bobby, Vinny, and Salvi. You have that now. And if Jonathan India can get going again, you know, but even as I say it, man, I got to stop myself because we've been saying this now for 3 months.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
CDOT.
Vern, now that we are getting closer to finding out who the All-Stars are, I'll ask you the same question I asked you a month or so ago. If I set the over-under at Royals All-Stars at 2.5, what would you take?
I'd hammer the over, because I think it's 3 at a minimum. I can understand 4 deserve it, but you're 2 games below 500. I don't know if you deserve anything. Bubic, Estevez, Bobby, and Mikel all deserve to be there. The pitching staff has to be rewarded. The rotation has to be rewarded. So Bubic, to me, is a obvious choice. Now he'll have a chance to further that candidacy tonight. But Estevez leads the American League in saves. I think that's a slam dunk. The fact that Bobby, we talked about this last week, the fact that Bobby still doesn't lead at shortstop, he's losing to a rookie that doesn't have a home city. That is jaw-dropping. But Bobby's going to be there on name recognition, and he deserves it. He's one of the 15 best players in the sport this season. Mikel's one of the 30 best players in the sport. But again, how many players does a below 500 team really warrant for the Midsummer Classic? So if anybody's going to get lopped off and ripped off, to me it's Mikel Garcia.
You mentioned a couple of times the Royals record, and it leads me into what I wanted to talk to you about next. Right now, we're joined by our Royals insider, Josh Fournier. This team is 19-30 against teams who are over 500. That's who they play for their next 13 games. They have Tampa Bay, who leads the wild card right now in the American League, the Dodgers, who might be the best team in baseball, Seattle, who would have the third wild card spot right now, and Arizona, who is in it in the mix in the National League. This feels like that fork in the road for the Royals season, that this is where they have usually not treaded water. They've done really well when they've played the bad teams in baseball, and they've kind of struggled against those teams. What I don't want to look up is we blink 2 weeks from now, the Royals went 4-9 in this stretch, and in some ways it feels like they've really eliminated themselves from the postseason. That seems possible with the stretch that they have.
19 games to go before the All-Star break, and all of them, except for the Pirates series, are against good teams. 6 teams in total, 4 of them right now have a playoff spot. Yeah, you give me the record of how the Royals perform against good teams. Here's the cold, hard truth. You know, I hate saying it, but I remain optimistic because of all the reasons I just mentioned. But no matter the statistic that you look at, things that good teams do, the Royals are not doing. They're 500 at home, 19-19. You mentioned that they're not beating good teams. Hitting with runners in scoring position, hitting for power. The only thing that this team does that is reflective of a postseason ball club is the rotation. A rotation that to me is second only to the Philadelphia Phillies. Honestly, this Tampa ball club can make a case that our rotation is just as good as yours. Wherever you want to go right now for this team, nothing about it makes you feel as if they're one of the best teams in Major League Baseball. And I'm not talking about one of the five. I'm talking about upper half, top 15. They're outside of the rotation. Nothing jumps out at you and says, stick with them. Stick with them because these guys are about to turn it around. 19 games to go before the All-Star break. The Mets are in there as well. Diamondbacks, I know they're banged up, but they're still above 500. You mentioned the Mariners, the Dodgers, and, of course, the red-hot Rays that have won 22 of their last 31. Now, Royals, I mean, you're hoping to go, what, 9-10 in this stretch? 8-11 going into the All-Star break and hoping to be four games below 500? I hate talking like that, but the onus is on these guys, most notably the offense, to change that sentiment.
No, and that certainly makes a lot of sense, and that's why I say right now, and you and I talked about this last week, just I don't know right now with the Royals, and that just feels like an uncomfortable position to be in. And I mean, I feel like this is the defining stretch for the Royals season. I mean, they have struggled so much against teams that are under 500 that, you know, let's say the Royals go 9-4 during this stretch. Well, then they should be in the mode of buying. If this team just continues to tread water, are we really advocating for a team that's 3-4 games under 500 to kind of push some of their chips in the middle of the table? Or when it comes to the other side, if the Royals kind of fall off a cliff and now you're getting those calls on Seth Lugo, you're getting a call for somebody in the bullpen. Like, this is the two and a half week stretch that to me will answer what I think the Royals should do.
Yeah, possibly. I think you can still have postseason aspirations and trade Seth Lugo. I think you can still have postseason aspirations and trade a bullpen piece. I think you can have one foot in the future and in the present because of that third wild card spot. You might be right. We might have all our answers in 2 weeks from now, 3 weeks from now at the All-Star break, but... You know, if this team's 46-51 at the All-Star break, five games below 500, 47-50 at the break, three games below 500, if I'm J.J. Piccolo, if I'm John Sherman, I'm not waving that white flag. Again, I'll move a Seth Lugo knowing that I'm only going to get prospects in return. But if I feel good that Cole Reagans is coming back and going to come back healthy, there's no reason why we can't have a really good month, get right back into that third wild card spot and find ourselves in October. So the only way I think we have our answer 2 weeks from now is if things go incredibly poorly or incredibly well. If they've gone the way that they've gone for a majority of this season, I think we'll be having this same conversation.
Vern, I remember, you know, in the early 2000s, I feel like Minnesota was kind of that example of small market teams. Oakland with Moneyball. I know that they haven't won a World Series, but Tampa Bay feels like that right now. Do you kind of look at it that way, that if you're the Royals, if you're a small market team, you kind of want to build your organization like Tampa Bay that's been very relevant over the last decade or so?
Yeah, and obviously John Sherman agrees. That's why he goes to those two organizations. You mentioned Tampa, and I think you can put Cleveland in there. They've taken over that mantle from Minnesota in the early aughts. I mean, the coaching staff, all from Cleveland and Tampa for the most part. Now, the only pushback I think John Sherman would give you, it's the same pushback he's given me when I bring up how he's trying to emulate the Rays and the Guardians. He would say, yeah, we're trying to take their approach and ability to win at a consistent basis, but you know, we also want to do it a little differently, put our own stamp on things, not be a carbon copy of the Guardians or the Rays, and I think that's already been on display with the aggression in free agency with Lugo, with Waka, this offseason, trying to get a Santander, a Profar. And when you don't get that bat, you don't put the money in the back pocket. You go out and spend it. You bring in a Carlos Estevez. You pay a Bobby Witt Jr. Tampa's not paying Bobby Witt Jr. They're trading him away. Cleveland isn't paying Bobby Witt Jr. They traded Francisco Lindor away. So, yeah, I agree you want to do what Tampa and Cleveland have done, and that is produce pitching. Right, that's what they've done. If we're being honest, they've produced pitching better than almost any other organization. Milwaukee and the Dodgers deserve some love. But they've also won a majority of their trades and a majority of their waiver claims. J.J. Piccolo can say the same thing. But what he can say that the guy in Cleveland and Tampa cannot is, my owner's actually willing to spend some money. So to me, Kansas City has it better right now when you're looking 10 years down the line than Tampa, than Cleveland.
Two more things, Vernon, we'll get you out of here. First off, you know, when you think of the Yankees, you might think of like Derek Jeter. When you think of the Mariners, you'll think of Ken Griffey Jr. Whenever you think of the Tampa Bay Rays, who's the player that comes to mind for you?
Evan Longoria would be the name. Evan Longoria hit that big home run down the left field line in game 162 to punch their ticket to the postseason. He was always a good ball player. I think that would be my choice.
Who would the other player be? Because that's who I thought of first. Then I was like, do I know any other Tampa Bay Rays? And I really started to struggle.
Yeah, I mean, James Shields, Wade Davis, Ben Zobrist obviously came over and played a key role for those title-winning teams here in Kansas City. I know the first pitcher, the opening day starter for the Tampa Bay Devil Rays in their first ever game was the knuckleballer Charlie Huff. So I think of Charlie Huff as well. Or was that the Marlins? No, you know what? I'm thinking of the Marlins. He was the... No, you're right. It's B.J. Upton, Carl Crawford, two other names that come to mind.
That's a good one. That's a good one.
There you go.
Have you ever been to their park before? I guess the old park?
No, R.I.P. Nope, never made it down there. Drove past it, but never really had an interest to get on the off-ramp.
Yeah, I was actually thinking this. You know, like part of what makes baseball so cool is all the stadiums are unique. You know, they all have their own little quirks and intricacies. You don't know, you've never heard anybody speak glowingly about Tampa Bay Stadium, which should tell you everything you need to know about it. People don't think your stadium is cool.
The only person I ever heard say anything good about it is the only person that would. I mean, you remember, he's a friend of the show, Andy McCullough, formerly of the Kansas City Star, just always trying to be different, always trying to be special. So, yeah, he would always say that was his favorite park. But
you know what? Of all the people that we've ever had on the show, if you had told me there's one person that loves Tampa Bay Stadium, Andy McCullough would have been number one on the board for me if we were playing Family Feud.
Exactly.
Nothing
no
about
doubt.
That is surprising that he loved the trips to Tampa Bay. Denny Matthews has never been to Tampa Bay. Like, I'm not saying, like, I'm just taking a wild random guess there. I can see Tampa Bay coming up and he's like, you know what? I'm going to go and stay home. I don't think I'm making that trip. Last question here. I have been starting to look ahead. I am hopeful that we get to see Shohei pitch on Saturday at Kauffman Stadium. Have you been looking ahead?
Of course. I mean, just that Shohei's going to be in the building is always worthy of making the trip. But yeah, the way that they're using him now, too, as this opener, it's brilliant. I mean, and it's amazing watching a guy stand up on the mound at Dodger Stadium, face the first three batters, walk to the dugout, doesn't go in the dugout. Someone hands him a helmet, and he just stays in the on-deck circle like it's freaking Little League. The dude's amazing. I can't wait to see it.
Ooh, the Texan is throwing out David Price as a former Ray. That's a good one. I forgot about David Price with the Rays. That's a really good give me a Tampa Bay Ray.
Josh Hamilton, that's where he started and, made a lot of mistakes.
You know what? That's one way to put it, Vern. I appreciate your time today, man.
I appreciate it, C-Dot. Thanks, man.
Thank you. That's our guy.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Service is not available in all areas.